If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, this is a forever symbol of our forever love. As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, thanks for standing up there with us. Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, hey, it's definitely been a while. Welcome back into the Fourth Man Podcast. And thanks to everyone who's tuning back in. It's been a while. It's been maybe close to a couple months, maybe just over a couple months since our last episode when we had Chaylen Johnson on the show. And quite a lot has happened. So sorry about being away for a long time. I've been trying to be as active as I possibly can on social media, finishing up some season highlights from last summer, as well as making sure that everyone is up to date on what's going on. But I had a big life event happen, and it's definitely slowed me down for a minute. But yeah, I just had to find some time, and finally I feel like I'm finding a rhythm and getting back into the swing of things. But I got a new job as a dad. So it's definitely been life-changing for the best, obviously, but it takes a little bit of used to getting some routine down. But nonetheless, you know, we're figuring out that routine. She's getting acclimated. We're getting acclimated as a family, and we got the big three season coming up. So that means weekly episodes, regularly scheduled, and going to start that here soon. But, I mean, it could be as far as this week. I'm not sure what the exact future holds for the rest of May. But we definitely are going to be starting the weekly episodes back up soon. And we got a lot to talk about. There's a lot that has transpired since the last time we were on the show. Now, we've obviously talked or I've mentioned this on social media, but haven't really talked about it in detail. So this is going to be a longer episode because there's a lot to cover. But also, too, I want to make sure that we're using the most of our time here to make sure that I'm not overwhelming you with the amount of information and thoughts that I have, especially toward the later portion in the show. So we obviously got to talk about probably the latest, biggest news with a Big Three team being sold, the first Big Three team being sold. I want to reflect a little bit on the Caitlin Clark offers that were made. I mean, it sounds like it was an initial offer, and then there were multiple offers that were given, I guess, but then it was actually just there was just one big offer. So I want to talk about the Caitlin Clark to the Big Three rumors and offers she was given. And then lastly, we're going to talk about some personnel changes that have happened. We got some new coaches, we got some new captains, and we're going to talk about the upcoming draft here. This is going to be dropped on Monday, so this coming Friday, May 24th, we got the combine and the draft coming up, and teams are getting locked and loaded. So we're going to get into it all on this episode. I just want to give a big thank you to everyone who's been patient with me and shown a lot of love on social media, just in terms of what we're putting out there. I know it's a long off season, but I want to be as active as I possibly can and bring on as many interviews. So thank you. That will be ramping up, like I said. Also want to give a shout out to Believe, the people that help produce this show. So thanks for being patient with me as well. Obviously there were some questions of where'd I go, and you know, just had to get some things situated. So thank you just everyone for the support. You know, obviously it's fun to do this. I want to talk about this, but it's definitely fun to collaborate and talk with others in the community about it as well. As always, make sure you're following on social media. That's at Fourth Man Pods, where I've been the most active over the past couple of months. 4TH Man Pod, Twitter, or it's X. I keep forgetting it's not Twitter. X and Instagram are going to be the places where I show the most love. Make sure you're also subscribed. Hit that notification bell on YouTube, youtube.com/fourthmanpod, where these episodes can be seen visually, as well as when we have player interviews, if we go out to events and we post anything from there. Most of that content is going to be dropped over there on YouTube. So make sure you are locked in over there. All right, let's not waste any time. We got a ton to cover. I think I've covered my spiel on why I've been gone, and let's get into some things that have happened. A lot has happened from the middle of March to now the middle of May. But the latest being that a Big Three team was sold recently. And I guess the more of the headline is the Big Three makes its first sale for a team. And they sold it for $10 million to an investment group called DCB Sports. It's been noted that this team will be based in Los Angeles, California. So pretty big news here, right? Like a couple years ago, we had the NFT ownerships where we had some majority stakeholders, we had some minority stakeholders. But the idea was, right, that a billionaire wouldn't be owning these Big Three teams. It would be the fans. And with purchases of the Fire tiers and all the other tiers that were involved, if you were to buy, you know, like one of the NFT tokens, you got some utility with it. There were some perks to investing into a team in terms of getting to go to the game, sitting courtside, having some behind the scenes access. And so now we're getting to a point where, you know, the league is expanding and growing a little bit. And I think they've definitely had some lessons learned. And it's a startup that's part of what happens without this. And part of something that was listed on, I guess, the terms of ownership when you bought the NFT token, I think specifically more so for majority stakeholders, is that if the team was sold to another group, then we would get to a point that I guess they would make like 40% of however much the team was sold for. So I just think this is a good step in the right direction, but it's pretty wild to think that like they've been doing this tour thing for a long time. They've seen a ton of success with it. And I think it's getting to a point where like, yeah, there's a ton of Big Three fans, but there's not there's not a lot of fans for certain teams, I guess this is the way I put it. Like, I think Ball Hawks has done a great job of trying to build that community of fans. There's been other teams like Trilogy's done a good job, I think, behind their ownership group, Axie. Power has grown their fan base a little bit more, but it's never really been a fan base because they're not based in a central location. And so now as the teams grow, you know, whether or not they would actually like move and live there just to play for 10 games throughout the summer. But I think now as the teams are growing, and they continue to, I guess, get better relationships with the different arenas and the ownership involved there when they're playing at these different stadiums, I think now you get to a point where, you know, you can have home games and there can be advantages of playing at your hometown, and fan bases will be tied and rooting on their favorite teams. So, and I think a lot of that comes too with expansion, right? I mean, it's just, I think it's hard to maybe put people all in one spot at certain points. A lot of these guys, players, coaches, the Big Three staff, like stay in the same hotel. Maybe it's difficult to like put up a bunch of people in one hotel with different reservations. Whatever the case may be, I think this is just part of a growing expansion of the league. And with that, you still don't have your billionaire owners. Like, you do have investment groups, yes, but still don't have your billionaire owners. I think other teams will cost probably more than $10 million, and I'll get to my thoughts on that in a second. But it's still like you're still trying to like grow and invest back into the league, and I think this is partially how you do this. And I think with you know, owners, there's a few other things you can do, you know, for their own right. I mean, I think there's just a lot of positives within like an ownership group owning this rather than the league or the majority stakeholders that have a part in it. And I think there's a lot you can do with it. And I think it'll help grow not only the fan base of the league, but fan bases of different teams. So this is super exciting. Now, in terms of which team I think got bought, I don't know. I don't know. I've definitely been asking around, trying to see if anybody knows. It doesn't seem like anybody, unless you're maybe you're at the top or you're one of the two co-founders. You know which team is going to be the LA team. Would it be an LA triplets, or, which this was recently just mentioned in an article when this news was dropped, one of the co-founders, Jeff Quantnitz, said that their plan is to have 16 teams by 2025. So maybe it's one of the new teams. Maybe this is the bar set low. Like, this is how much one of the new teams will cost, which is $10 million, which says a lot about, like, an evaluation of a team. Like, right, like, if in the grand scheme of things, a sports team at $10 million, like, that is cheap as hell, right? And that would that's pretty wild. But if this is like the bottom tier rate for a new team that hasn't even been established, has no history, never had a captain, then what's that to say about like a three-time champ like Trilogy or the reigning champs and enemies and how much, you know, they could be worth? So all that to be said, I think it could be one of the new teams. Honestly, I think it could be one of the new teams. It was also mentioned in that article. I can't remember who the article was by. I think it was by Bloomberg. But so you can go check it out on there. I'm sure if you type in Bloomberg, big three teams sold, I'm sure it will come up somewhere. But I think it was also mentioned by Jeff Quantnitz in that article is that they will have news of other teams being bought before the season starts, or maybe during the middle of the season. I thought it was before the season starts. And I think he said at least like four teams, they'll have news about that. So it sounds like they've been making their rounds and having conversations about selling different teams. And maybe they've already made the final sale for some of these teams, if not just these new teams. So it sounds like they got a good plan in place. Obviously, they have different guys running things now in the big three, I guess, the big three board. You know, well, they do have a different board member in there, you know, the former Taco Bell CEO. So maybe he's kind of assisting and consulting and how some of these things should go and helping this thing grow. But they have some, I think, different guys up in like the big three staff that are helping make some changes as well. So sounds like a lot of positive changes, especially as the league is not only expanding but starting to become more well known after a successful season last year and even the year before. So I'm pretty excited. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you want to see one of the current 12 teams be based in Los Angeles, or would you want to see like a new team? You know, what do you think the new teams could be named? I think we're running out of like threes puns here, right? Like, I think at this point it would be tough to make another one, but you know, you have your aliens, your bivouacs, your enemies. So, you know, they could go a different route, and you'll always know that the teams with the threes puns are kind of the OGs. The interesting thing about this is, reflecting back on that Bloomberg article just one last time, is that they also mentioned wanting to have teams in London and Ontario. And I do have some questions about that, because like I said, these guys are probably not going to like uproot their lives and move to another city to play 10 games out of the year, especially for these guys that are being entered back in the draft for like a 1 year stint. And I guess that happens in professional sport, but like, it's more like a summer stint. You know, maybe they could stay out there for the summer or whatever the case might be. So those question marks really just stem from like, how is the London and Ontario home games going to work? Like, you're going to fly guys that play for the London, let's just use enemies, the London enemies. You know, you're going to fly guys there every weekend and then fly the opposing team that's going to play there. Is the home team going to just be living there throughout the summer and then traveling? I mean, that travel schedule would be ridiculous. That would be a tough travel schedule. They'd have to travel a few days early. It's like, what's the point even having the home team in London? I don't know. I would be interested to see how that stuff works. That's the questions I have. Canada, I guess, makes a little bit more sense. But then obviously, too, there's some. I'm sure most of these guys have their passport or whatever. But I wonder about, like, you know, the home games, if we were going to have some home games in London and Ontario. Do you have like a full European team like based over there? Still, the travel schedule would be insane. Like, they traveled there for one game, the championship game last year and the All-Star game. You know, imagine four games out of the year, you're traveling somewhere else. And if you're not going to be based in London, you're traveling for eight games, because you're always having like out of the states, you're always traveling out of the country on a European excursion for eight games. I don't know. It makes sense. It makes sense in the sense that, like, they want to build more fans and community, like, overseas. And then London would be a good spot because you just had your championship game there. But the logistics part of it, like, still a question mark. But it's still early, I guess. So hopefully they can make more sense of it and they come to the right decision there. So first big three team sold for $10 million to DCB Sports. We'll see how all that plays out. We'll see if we get any more news before the season starts. Got less than a month before the season starts. Pretty wild. Moving on, want to reflect on the Caitlin Clark situation because obviously there was a lot going on and there was news that was dropped by TMZ that she had gotten a $5 million offer to play in the Big Three. Now, this is still while the women's college basketball tournament was going on and they were in the thick of it still playing. And before she had even suited up for the Indiana Fever, this news was dropped. And when I first heard the news, like, I thought, okay, that's pretty cool. I mean, you know, the first woman to play in the Big Three, she'd be the first college player to make that jump into the Big Three. She would still get a chance to play in the WNBA while also playing simultaneously in the Big Three, like, for 10 games, eight to 10 games. And she's making a huge check, right? She'd bring a ton of publicity to the Big Three. She did just, you know, her name alone did, just by there being rumors about her playing in the Big Three. So I thought there were a lot of positives, but then you start to think about it a little bit more and there's a lot of pros and cons to not only Caitlin Clark joining the Big Three, but for the Big Three themselves. And then you take it a step further and it was announced that before she was drafted, I think, or maybe when she was drafted, that the offer still stood. And there was actually a lot more involved in this offer. I mean, this offer was on the basis of being worth essentially $15 million. It was a 2-year deal for $10 million, so $5 million a year. She would get 50% of merchandising revenues from her name, image, and likeness alone, a percentage of team ownership. She would get the chance to play for Nancy Lieberman and Power. So essentially you got to pick your team that you got to play for. Then she also got to, oh, and the last thing is she got ownership of the Big Three documentary, which was going to give her a 7-figure advance up front. And you're thinking, I mean, again, cool. Like, this is someone that's definitely creating a lot of buzz and noise for women's basketball, for the WNBA. She's blazing a lot of trails. I'm not knocking any of that. Like, that's incredible. That's amazing. And you definitely want to see that just as a basketball fan in general. But just looking at it objectively, I felt like there were a lot of pros and cons for both the league and Caitlin Clark. I think for Caitlin Clark, obviously the pro is, like, you're making a ton of money, right? I mean, essentially you'd be making $625,000 per game, and you're also going to be making a check playing in the WNBA, and all you have to do is miss one game of the Fever season. You know, not only that, you're already blazing a huge path, but now you're creating other avenues and lanes by being the first woman to play in the Big Three, the first woman to play, I guess, professionally in a men's league. Is that accurate? I don't know if that's accurate, but if you're not the first, you're one of the first for sure, right? You're the first player to jump from college to straight to the Big Three, which has never been done before, as mentioned. And at the same time, like, I guess what I'm saying is you're essentially creating trails and blazing paths for the entire sport of basketball. You're making a lot of buzz in the WNBA. You're potentially helping another young league in the Big Three grow. I mean, it's substantial, you know, like what kind of impacts you're having. So you're adding, so you're not only helping leagues grow and create, you know, blazing these paths to play, you know, amongst the like women professionally, and then also like, you know, guys that used to play in the NBA, like top tier guys that used to play in the NBA and the big three. But so within all that, you're adding to your legacy. And if she performs well, you know, you're kind of showing that the skill gap isn't too far off from men and women, or for some men and women, potentially helping more women, or potentially helping women in the WNBA get paid a little bit more, because you're kind of showcasing like, hey, we're more elite level athletes than, you know, you think, or you're paying us for. I think obviously a lot has to do with like the TV viewership and whatnot, but whatever the case is, you know, she's helping in that regard as well. We already saw her help the WNBA get, you know, the team to get charter flights. So there's a ton of pros for Caitlin Clark herself, just like joining this league. She's adding a ton to her legacy. But then the cons of this is that, okay, what if she doesn't perform well, right? Like, first off, it's a ton of wear and tear. You're already seeing the physicality and the you know, I don't want to say the skill gap, but definitely the adjustment that she's trying to make into the WNBA right now. And then you think about her playing in the big three, that's supposed to be even more physical than probably any basketball league out there. I mean, they're allowing hand checking. There's hard fouls in it all the time. The wear and tear would be insane. And I'm not going to say it would be like for 2 years, and it would only be like 8 games at most out of the year she'd be playing in the big three at the same time. But it would just be a lot for your body. Like, it would just take a toll on your body to be able to play in both leagues at the same time. And like simultaneously, you know, there's a lot of pressure on her shoulders. I'm not saying that she hasn't lived up to pressure. She's obviously done a lot of great things in her college career, and then number one pick with the Fever. But that's a ton of pressure for now someone being even more under a microscope, because she's just creating all these buzz and headlines of being the first woman to play in the big three in the men's league, and how she's going to fare there. I mean, you saw all the noise that was had around her playing in her first game for Indiana, and then the reception afterwards when she had the most turnovers ever for in a WNBA debut. You know, I think maybe as a number one pick, or I don't know the exact stat, but, you know, just it was a big highlight of her having 10 turnovers, more so than just like her scoring 20 points and how she adjusted to the league and things like that. It was more so just how could we, you know, praise her and then, you know, criticize her right after the game was done. So then you're adding more pressure to that than playing in the big three. Then you're also, you know, if she doesn't perform, you're bringing up conversations about like, oh, like, you know, you'll have a lot of doubters out there, obviously. So it's like, oh, we told you she couldn't do it. I told you she was too physical. We told you the skill gap between men and women was this much. Whatever the case may be. Like, you're just raising a lot of question marks, and there's a lot of divergence, I feel like, in the game of basketball. Sometimes between men and women's basketball, even more so. And I feel like you're just creating a bigger separation, you know, between the sport, which obviously it's more about bringing it together and growing the game than it is just seeing, like, you know, having split conversations about this and that. So, I mean, I don't know how much does that wear and tear outweigh like that amount of money? Like, obviously she never took the offer. I don't know if the offer still stands today, if she could take it, but it's a lot, you know. Obviously it was probably a lot for her to weigh, and she hadn't even heard about the offer until like the day of the draft or the day of the NCAA tournament. Or was it the tournament? I'm trying to remember. I feel like it's been already a couple months ago. It wasn't during the actual tournament game, but it was like leading up to the next tournament game that she heard about this. She didn't even know about it. It was only her agent that conversation. So on the flip side, for the big three itself, like, I feel like there's a lot more pros and cons for the league itself. I mean, again, you're adding to, like, the pro is that you're adding innovation. You continue to be a trailblazer in basketball, revolutionary thinking from the Big Three. You know, we already had two women coaches that are in the Big Three. They've both won championships. They've already, you know, installed different aspects to half court basketball where it's got the 4-point shot. You bring back hand checking. You got to bring the fire challenge, you know, so you're adding even more innovation by bringing in Caitlin Clark to play on a week to week basis. It was obviously great publicity. No, regardless of what happened and which decision she made, there was a lot of headlines that included Big Three in it and Ice Cube and Jeff Quantin's this and Caitlin Clark that, right? Like tied to all that. So it was huge. I mean, she's also just helping the women's game as well. Like she's already a pioneer in the women's game, but I think she's even transcending it further by being included in these kind of conversations. So there was, and you do all this at a time when there's like already millions of viewers during the NCAA tournament, like women's NCAA tournament run. So, and with like ticket prices and demand rising with the fever, you know, those conversations were going on already because everyone knew she'd be the number one pick. So like you do this at a time when there's already a lot of publicity around Caitlin Clark. And then you throw the Big Three into there, and it's a big topic of discussion. Like, so it was great publicity, right? And then the biggest thing I think is like, and it's hard to weigh like which one is really the biggest thing, right? But the last thing I guess I would say is that, you know, you're creating a realistic, credible path to jump from college basketball to the Big Three. And, you know, the Big Three has throughout the years already gotten younger and more competitive. And then you're adding another avenue for guys that didn't necessarily make the NBA to jump to. Rather than go overseas, you get to play stateside. You know, you get to play in front of your friends and family and build more tape before the NBA season where you could potentially get signed. I guess if things went well, we've seen a couple guys go from the Big Three to the NBA. But just creating like a realistic jump to say like, hey, like if all things went well, like there's potential that guys would come that didn't make the NBA might come to the Big Three instead of going overseas or playing in the G League or whatever the case may be. Because it's not during the season, it's before the season. You're giving yourself more tape, more opportunity to showcase that you can play against, you know, at least former NBA guys or guys that could probably still play in the NBA. You're also getting mentorship from Hall of Famers, regardless of who your coach is, or high-level NBA players. I mean, there's a lot of pros to it. So if she could have created that jump, that would have been insane. So obviously a lot of pros for the Big Three if Caitlin Clark would have joined. But I got to think the cons could have been detrimental to the Big Three if things hadn't worked out. And I almost feel like if she had joined, there would still be some cons within there, right? Like just her joining, I think, would have had some cons is basically what I'm saying. Not just if she didn't perform well, but first off, I felt like, and you kind of felt this a little bit on social media at times, whether they were saying it directly or not, but players that got you to this point, like the OGs of the Big Three, gotta feel a little slighted. Like, I don't know who's making $5 million in the Big Three today, but I was under the impression that no one was making $5 million in the Big Three today. And so all these guys that got you here, now you're gonna give up that much capital and give someone that much of a salary off, you know, and I understand what she's bringing to the table, but these guys are the ones that got you here to a point where you can even ask that question. So I felt like it's a business thing. I get it. But I did feel like players probably felt a little slighted. And I don't know if all the players were super comfortable with the idea. The other thing is that if it didn't work out, that's a lot of capital to invest into one player. Like, what if she didn't perform? We've seen guys that didn't perform in the Big Three. And I don't know if she would have been a co-captain or just like a player that was automatically added to the team. I have no idea. But if she didn't perform well, if the guys in the Big Three don't perform well, they are cut, they are gone. Like, and you're bringing someone else in. If it didn't work out for her, or I mean, you've already guaranteed this contract, right? Or like, was she going to make that on a game-to-game basis, or did you guarantee her the $5 million? You also guaranteed her like all these incentives that include it. Like, imagine a documentary where she didn't make it the whole season because things weren't going well. So that's a lot of capital, I feel like, just to put into one player in hopes that it'll help grow the league, in hopes that she does well, you know, to help grow this league. Like, I feel like there's a lot of risk reward there if things didn't go well. And the last thing is, it's probably a little bit smaller, but I think it did create just another topic of discussion, is that there's already this like rift between the NBA and the Big Three. And with the WNBA operating under the NBA, right? Like, do you create another rift by just doing things untraditionally? Like, I love untraditionally. Like, so that, I don't know if that's a huge deal, and I doubt, you know, the guys in the Big Three would have cared. But if the end goal is to get, you know, to some kind of partnership with the NBA, like, I don't think this is helping in that way as well, because now you're kind of pissing off the people in the front office over there at the WNBA with this kind of move if she were to take that offer. So a lot of pros and cons. I know I dove deep into it, but it's been for what I would have wanted to do is talk about this while things were unpacking, but I didn't get a chance to. So I've had a lot of time to sit on a lot of these things and just think about it. But I'd love to know everyone else's thoughts too. I mean, if the offer is still on the table, I'd be interested to see if she took it. My thoughts is that the offer's there and she's just not going to take it, and she's going to focus on the Indiana Fever and helping grow the WNBA while she's playing in that league. And, you know, maybe down the line some things could change, but she's got to get adjusted to the WNBA, right? Like, right now, if I'm the Big Three and I'm seeing, and I know she's a rookie, I know there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, but right now, like, you're kind of thinking like, oh man, it's like, it, early in her career, it's going to be tough. Like, imagine her playing against a bunch of former NBA guys in a 3-on-3 setting. It would be, you know, you got to think like, I guess you got to think about the offer a little bit more, but let me know what everyone else thinks. I know some people were for it. I know some people were against it. Some people said she wouldn't score a point. I got to think she'd score a point. She'd probably hit a couple 4-pointers for sure. I mean, she's got some range on her shot. She's definitely a shooter, but, you know, playing defensively, like if she was defending some of these guys or going against them offensively when driving in the lane, I've seen her take some hard hits already in her professional debut. Now imagine some guys that are a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, like going against the competition a little bit. I don't know. For the third time, let me know what you guys think. I'm curious to know everyone's thoughts. My final thoughts are, I would like to see how she does in the WNBA before making any kind of substantial offer to Caitlin Clark herself. I think if you were to make an offer to a women's player, and I get her, like, the buzz coming out of college and, like, her jumping to the WNBA, like, we've explained that. But if you're going to make an offer to a player in the WNBA, like, make one to someone who's already established himself in the WNBA, like, It would have been a crazy thought to like offer. It wouldn't have been as crazy as I thought, but it would have been crazy if like someone like Asia Wilson was playing in the Big Three, right? Like, she's been dominating the WNBA. She's the best player over there in that league. Like, it would have been cool to see her play in the Big Three. But I feel like if you're going to offer anybody, like maybe someone like her should have been offered, or like Brittany Griner, Brianna Stewart, one of those players who have established themselves more so than a rookie. Also got to think, like, is Caitlin Clark still going to come? She got that huge deal from Nike, like an 8-year deal. She's also got these like huge, advertisement deals going on. So I don't know. I feel like maybe money isn't as an important factor for her anymore, you know, regardless of the offer. But it's an interesting topic of discussion. Definitely, you know, brought the Big Three's name up at a good time leading up to the season. Like, I think it was definitely good publicity, and it's an interesting conversation. Definitely created some buzz around social media and the basketball world for sure. All right, let's talk about what's to come in the Big Three that's actually happening right now. So a ton of personnel changes, and this is our last topic of the day, but a ton of personnel changes leading up to the draft and the combine, which is on May 24th. And it is at, the combine's at 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And the draft is from 7 to 10 p.m. Wondering if that's Vegas time or not, now that I'm looking at that. But either way, combine's in the morning and the draft is at night. And there has been a few personnel changes with, I'm sure, more to come as I'm dropping this on Monday. I'm assuming throughout this week that we'll hear a little bit more. But we've heard about Rashard Lewis moving from captain to head coach for the Three-Headed Monsters. Also heard that Jeff Teague, who it was already announced that he was going to be joining the league as a captain, will be the captain for Three-Headed Monsters. So the new coaching captain pairing at Three-Headed Monsters will be Rashard Lewis and Jeff Teague. And Teague becomes only the second captain ever for Three-Headed Monsters, with Rashard Lewis there being there from the start, which is crazy. Earl Clark got promoted to captain of Trilogy. That's an interesting one. I thought that's going to be James White's kind of his last dance, his final run as a player. So I'm not sure where James White fits into things. But anyways, Earl Clark was promoted to captain from co-captain. So cool story there. Number two pick, co-captain, champion, now the captain. It's also announced that Greg Monroe is going to join the Big Three. So I got to think he's going to be a captain somewhere, whether that's a captain or a co-captain, I'm not sure. Same thing as with Paul Millsap. I got to think he's going to be a captain somewhere as well. Like, you don't just, you know, announce these guys on your social media most of the time. Don't announce these guys on social media and make a big deal out of it if you're just going to make them someone that's going to be in the player pool. Like, I got to imagine they're going to own a team somewhere. So I've definitely heard a couple things. I don't know how true they are, but I'm interested to see if those things align with what I've heard. So a lot of personnel changes with the upcoming draft. And I'm excited for this because last year it was a little bit more untraditional. There wasn't as much of an announcement. And by the way, we are doing a draft live stream. I'll talk more about that at the end of this episode. But I'm excited that the draft is coming back. It looks like it's going to be in Vegas again. And I heard from someone within the league that they said they think this is going to be the most competitive league they've ever had. And I know the competition ramps up every year and we get more, you know, very talented players joining this league. And we saw a new champion last year. But I really think that, based off what I'm hearing, that this is going to be an extremely competitive year, to the point where, like, any team could really be any team this year. I think there's going to be some major changes throughout the league. I think we're going to see some captain changes. We've already seen some captain changes, but even some more captain changes. And I'm excited to see what's up some of these teams' sleeves, because some of these teams I have no idea about. I haven't even heard one thing about them. So it's going to be interesting to see how things play out. But the draft and the combine is on May 24th, so next Friday. And I want to give some quick thoughts on the different teams throughout the league. So just some things to keep an eye on. Now, some of these things will change, but just some things to keep an eye on as you're heading into the draft in the event that some of these don't, right? Let's start with our champs enemies. So enemies has Swaggy P as their head coach and Jordan Crawford as her captain. Last year, they had Isaiah Austin and Elijah Stewart as her co-captains. We've heard from Jordan Crawford on our show when he came and we got a chance to talk to him that he was hoping to be captain one day and that he was hoping to bring in someone like Marshawn Brooks into the league. I'm curious if that's something he's still trying to do. Like, does he try to get him into the draft pool? Do one of those co-captains not return? I'd be interested to see that. So just something to keep an eye on. Like, Marshawn Brooks is his guy. It's someone he wanted to join. He said he was going to try to get him in next year when he said that in 2023. So I'm interested to see if we see Marshawn Brooks in the league this year. That'd be dope. He's a killer. I feel like he's an underrated guy too. Triplets, got Joe Johnson and the Pargo brothers and Jeremy and Gennaro. For some odd reason, like, I feel like Gennaro Pargo is not going to be back. He played less minutes last year. He's obviously been established as a coach for a long time, especially now recently with the Indiana Pacers. I'm wondering if he has decided to kind of hang them up and will move full-time into coaching. It sounds like that's what James White is doing. I'm just saying, is Gennaro Pargo thinking in the same wavelength? And if that's the case, then who do they add as a co-captain? Do they add one of the guys that have been mentioned, or do they have something up their sleeve in terms of like maybe someone from the league that they want, or someone from outside the league playing for the first time? Ghost Ballers, I think they'll run the same three captains back: Mike Taylor, Jonathan Simmons, and Chris Johnson. I think that's a solid trio. They made a ton of strides. Mike seemed like he seemed very comfortable with the guys he had. Now they'll have to send their guys back to the draft pool. But I know they're big on continuity. But the thing is, they won't have Chuck Garcia this year. So I know Mike's already thinking of guys who are in that draft pool and like guys he'd want to like add to this team. So I'm curious to see which direction they go in the draft. But I think as far as captains, they stay the same. Trilogy, we mentioned Earl Clark being captain now. I don't know where James White fits into all of this. I also am curious about someone like Amir Johnson, who he's played a lot. He's won two championships with Trilogy. But, you know, he's a guy that's kind of moving into coaching as well. And I feel like every time I see him hit the deck and try to get up, I feel like his knees are definitely feeling it a little bit. Not saying that he can't play. I'm just saying, like, it looks painful to see him get up sometimes. So I just feel like it comes to a point where some of these guys, like, okay, especially someone like Amir Johnson, who's had a ton of success in this league. And when did he join? 2021. So, like, the 3 years he's been in this league. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be like, hey, I won a couple chips. You know, it's been a successful run. I'm moving on. You never know. I feel like we've seen that with some players in the past. Hell, we saw Jared Jack just for 1 year. It was just one and done. He did it all and then left. So that's just my thoughts. I'd be curious about where the co-captains stand and if they try to bring Hezzy God back. And, you know, does James White move into a coaching role, or he still got stacked there? I don't know. I'm interested to see how that plays out. Moving on to Killer Threes, I think it'll be the same guys. If anything, I feel like they'll try to bring back the same team for the most part. It's definitely going to be Frank, Dante, and Josh Powell is what I think, unless they change things up. I don't know. I feel like if anybody were to not play in the league again, it would maybe be Josh Powell, but I just don't see that. And then I think they go and try to get Dominique Johnson back for a third straight year. I just feel like he's a Killer Three at heart, and he just fits that bill. And unless anybody else picks him up, he's probably going to be a Killer Three again. But that's the makeup I have for their team. I don't think any of their captains change either. Power is an interesting story. You got Cat, you got Contino Mobley, you got Akeel Mitchell. Wait, I said Cat and Contino Mobley, didn't I? You got Cat, you got Royce White, and Akeel Mitchell. I knew something sounded off there. I don't know how those captains play. Like, does Cat come back for another year? I think Royce White will be back. He's already mentioned that he wants to win a chip. So I have no doubt that Royce White will probably be back. And does Akeel Mitchell return to the league? He was a guy that played his first year last year. They picked him up as a co-captain. The thing is, why I'm unsure about these captains is because Gwynn Rice Jr. and TJ Klein, they both are going to go back into the draft pool. So how is that going to play out? Like, I think they would add them back if they could. But Gwynn Rice Jr. was the number one pick when Power got him. Like, it's going to be tough to get him back again for a guard-needy team. And if some of these teams do change up in terms of captains, there could definitely be some guys that need some guards, regardless if big men are a hot commodity or not. Like, Gwynn Rice Jr. is a two-time All-Star in this league. He's a Rookie of the Year. Someone's going to want him if Power can't bring him back, or they don't make him a co-captain. So, you know, be wary of Power's situation there. Ball Hogs, Leandro Barbosa, Jody Meeks, I think they both come back. Jeff Ayers, I would think that I don't know why they wouldn't bring him back, but he's a guy that definitely just, you know, they've kind of had a revolving door in that third or that second co-captain spot, third captain spot. So just something to keep an eye on. Like, maybe they just bring all these captains back. Again, they're in a situation where it's like, okay, but do you give up DeJuan Summers, who is their number one pick, right? It's hard to, like, want to let those guys go when you don't have the opportunity to bring them back because you weren't in the chip last year. So another thing to keep an eye on. Three's Company, they have Mario Chalmers and Michael Beasley. They did have Brandon Rush, but Rush was let go week two or three. Then they brought in Tony Allen, who was like the co-captain. But is Tony Allen going to come back for another season? Like, how much did he enjoy it? And, you know, how much did... I don't want to say Tony Allen was out of shape or like hadn't played in a while, but he definitely looked rusty at time and didn't always play a ton of minutes. So, like, do they add Tony Allen? Like, Mario Chalmers is a guy who's got a ton of things up his sleeves. He's always trying to recruit. I mean, hell, he was on the Big Show podcast with Shaq, which recruit, like, saying, I don't know how real he's being, but he was, like, recruiting Shaq on there. So, interested, you know, might want to keep an eye on that co-captain spot as well. There's, like, looking at this, there could be a lot of captain spots open. Tri-State, they got Jason Richardson. I imagine he's back. I imagine Justin Dittman's back. They got Deshaun Stevens, who they just added. I don't foresee them changing their captain spots either. I think they're pretty solid there. Bivouac, they got the Green Brothers, Gerald and Garland, and Corey Brewer. I don't think their captains change either. Unless Corey Brewer is going to be like maybe some of the other guys. You know, he's a coach with the Pelicans. Does he give up playing completely? I don't know. I feel like that those three are running it back. It's more so they need to figure out what they're going to do with their draft picks. I feel like that's where they fumbled the bag a little bit. Three-headed monsters. I've already mentioned the changes. I mentioned that Jeff Teague will be the captain there next year. Reggie Evans, Kevin Murphy were the co-captains last year. Does Jeff Teague just settle into this team and be the captain and keep those guys around? I mean, Reggie Evans has been a staple. Murphy's been a staple. Murphy coming off injury, coming back. Like, I don't think he can go the wrong direction. The only thing is that I feel like a lot of captains in this league, when they take over a new team, they don't, unless they've been a part of that team, like if they're coming out of nowhere, they usually like to change things up. But you can't go wrong with Evans or Murphy either. So that's definitely an interesting place to keep an eye on as well. I think three-headed monsters, aliens, like just after the seasons they had, and they were a little injury riddled, started a little weird. Like, I think we could see a lot of shakeup with the bottom two teams there for sure, as well as a team like Power and Three's Company. That is where I think the most changeup will have. But let me know what your thoughts are. What are you most curious about? Who'd you like to see? Who else would you like to see join this league? Like, I would imagine that maybe there's one more player they could get to join this league. Who knows? I got to think that contracts have been signed and teams are lined up. It's interesting. I'm very interested to see who's going to be joining this league. But the draft is coming up. It's on Friday. Like I said, we're going to have a live show. The live show is going to be simultaneous to the draft. The idea is to have some returning guys on the show. And we're going to try to bring in another player or two, maybe get some live updates from the draft as well. If anything, you know, I will be your staple there. I'll be holding it down. The idea is just to try to get some other guys to join me on Friday as well to talk a little bit more about the draft. But I'm excited to bring this back. This has always been a fun experience in the past. We usually have Dante Green on the show, but I think he's going to be in Vegas for the draft. So we're going to try to make that work. I feel like he's a good correspondent of The Fourth Man, been on the show three times. So we will try to make that work. I'm trying to bring our guy Jeff Key back. I'm telling you all my plans right now, like, I can't just tell you in the future when they're solidified, but these are just, I think, people that hopefully can make the show in the past. They've had a little bit more time. They got a lot going on now, a lot of different things. So anyways, draft show, it'll be on X, but we'll also be covering the draft as well. You can get our thoughts and reactions as well if you tune in. So it'll be at 7 p.m. when the draft starts, and I hope a lot of you guys at least show up there and, tune in and give us your thoughts. We'll read off some different questions and interact with some players there as well. It'll be a fun experience. It'll definitely be cool. But that being said, we will also have another episode after the draft to talk about our thoughts around the team. The other thought is I hope to have a mock draft this week if I get the draft list. I'm not sure if I have a chance to get it, and if they release a captain. So they got to release the captains, I feel like, before the draft. So as long as everything plays out like it should, we'll have a lot of content for you. Regardless, we're going to have a lot of things to talk about this week. So make sure you're tapped in on social media at Fourth Man Pod, 4TH Man Pod, and subscribed on YouTube, youtube.com/fourthmanpod. Thank you again, everybody, for just being patient with me and tuning back into the show. We got a lot of excited, got a lot of things to be excited for. I'm so excited I can't even get my words out straight, but got a lot of things to be excited for this summer and just for the future of this league. So I think a lot of it starts with how things go this year, and I think this could be a really competitive summer where we could see a lot more people joining this community because of what's to come. But thanks for being patient with me. I appreciate you guys as always, and see you guys next time.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything, because anything can happen after noon.
Meet Gail. Her thing is being a supermom, and supermom has a lot on her supersized plate.
Ain't that the truth?
But at Walmart Pharmacy, Supermom recently got her whole family updated on all their vaccines.
We knocked it out during a grocery run. No appointment.
That's next level supermom. From pneumonia to shingles, HPV, and more, get no-cost vaccinations from an expert pharmacist where you already shop. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart. $0 copay with most insurances. State age and health restrictions may apply.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.